Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This is The Beat with Ari Melber, and this is one of those days I get excited about. Jeru the Damager is here.
How are you?
International rapper in every sense of the word. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me here. It was an honor. You know, so many people hit me up on Instagram. They like, oh my God, Ari Melber, you know that dude? He's reciting your lyrics. So I was like, oh, that's real cool. Now, you know, I've seen you do it before.
Yeah.
But it's always different when it's your stuff. And then the topics that you use the rhymes for, they're so appropriate.
Well, thank you.
So
that means a lot coming from you.
Yeah,
thank
I was you. Like, you know what? Let me hit this guy up and say.
No, I was glad we got to start talking. And the reason it came up, it wasn't like, oh, how do I get Jeru out of Germany and back to New York? It wasn't like
no,
that.
No.
It was more looking at Mike Flynn.
Right.
Who went around the country running against Hillary saying, you know, this is what happens, lock her up. You
right.
plead the fifth, that means you
right.
did something wrong. Then it was because he couldn't stop running his mouth that he got in so much trouble, and so we said, you're playing yourself. And let's be clear, people have been quoting that for a long time. I want to show
yeah.
you people in hip-hop today, and some of the younger, newer viewers may know these folks even maybe
right.
more than the forefathers.
They know me, for sure, right.
Let's take a look, playing okay. yourself.
Let's play a new segment right now. Let's have a little fun. It's called Congratulations.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
So all that big Willie talk, hop you up. Playing yourself. You're playing yourself. You're playing yourself.
Congratulations. You played yourself.
I'm giving the congratulations you played yourself to America.
Ebro's got your beat, so he's given the direct citation. Other
right.
people call it and others say it.
Right.
What does it mean, you played yourself?
It basically means that you made a fool of yourself. That nobody had to do anything to you, you did it to yourself. And that's what a lot of people do in general. You know what I'm saying? I don't like to say too much. See, when I say I'm playing myself. No, but seriously, a lot of people, they write checks that they're behind, can't cash.
Right.
As we used to say.
Mm-hmm.
They talk a big game, they put out all of these different ideas and things, but are not willing to back them up. Or when the heat comes, they run in the other direction.
And that's a big issue in hip-hop, which is a big issue in America. Sometimes people ask me about what is hip-hop and hip-hop culture. Well, hip-hop is one of the most American art forms from America, so it's American culture.
Right.
So we say we have a bravado problem or a materialism problem or a violence problem or a gun problem. Yeah, we have that in hip-hop to some degree, I would argue.
Of course.
We have it across America.
Of course.
So what does it tell you coming out of, you come out of New York?
Right.
You've gone global, I want to get to that.
Right.
That the hip-hop culture and the American culture believes in the bravado and the celebration sometimes before you're there, before you got it.
Well, I mean, first of all, American culture was always about bravado. This place has been taken from other people who were here for thousands of years before, right?
Right.
They came, kicked them out. It's bravado. They used their guns. Hip-hop is about bravado because when you don't have much, all you have is your word. And you use your words to make yourself shine.
Right.
And that's what that came from, the braggadocious nature of hip hop. But what happened is, before it was so much video and the internet and all of those things, hip hop was art imitating life. Now it's life imitating art.
Right.
So people see these guys on there with the guns and this and tattoos on their faces and they want to be that because they think that that's real. But then when guys get locked up, like, let's say, Tekashi 6ix9ine, they go right against the street code.
It's you saying that? I mean, Dapper Dan talks about how when he was designing his clothes in Harlem, originally he was dressing the gangsters who had money.
Right.
And then the rappers came in and wanted to dress like the gangsters.
Right.
And then he said the next wave was now the gangsters trying to pretend to look like rappers.
And it's a cycle. It's a cycle, and that's what it is. But you know, the thing is, a lot of these rappers, I grew up in East New York in the 80s when crack first came out. It was really hard. Life was rough. I mean, I knew some really shady individuals, and I took part in some things that I wouldn't be proud of as an adult. But you have to survive. It's like you could either be the predator or the prey.
Right.
You pick one. And people glorifying that, that's why I came out with my records the way I came out with my records, against the violence, against the hatred, against, because that's where we grew up. That's what I grew up in. So that's what I wanted to kind of push back and think that maybe through this music, we could bring the world together and make it a nicer place. Even though, I mean, I was quite arrogant. I thought I knew it all.
Well, you were bravado about the consciousness. You're mentioning what you were doing at the time. Let's, may I go J-Roo to J-Roo?
Yes, you may.
I don't push a Lex. Mm-hmm. Others had to turn their flex. J-Roo is up next. These so-called players up in the rap game got brothers on the corner selling cocaine. It used to be LaToya and Jim Hats, but now it's Uzi's Max and G-Packs of Cracks. And then you say, everybody's psycho or some type of good fellow. Me, I keep it real. That's all swine like Jell-O.
Yes.
Did you know you were going to come out and just sort of put a big part of the game on blast? Because at that point in time, you were going up against what was radio rap.
I didn't care. I didn't care because I was from the streets of East New York. That was everyday life. Like, I'm not a gangster, but I've never been afraid. And that's what it was. I wasn't afraid. I felt that was my duty.
What percent of human mistakes do you think people make based on fear?
All of them.
100.
All of them. Because when you're afraid, sometimes you think too much, and sometimes you think too little. You have to kind of like calm yourself down and know that a lot of times fear is just a feeling. It's not even real. You make yourself afraid of things that might happen. They might not even happen.
I love you saying that. I think anyone can relate to that because when you say a feeling, it's real in that you feel it and you shouldn't deny it. But when we try to attach reason, rationality, meaning to a feeling that might just be passing through us like other things that come and go.
And you know, it's funny because fear feels just like excitement.
Right.
Or hatred.
Some people get off on fear. I mean, scary movies is a controllable fear. So you get the energy, but you're in control.
Roller coasters.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. Human beings are the only animal that holds on to their fear. Mm-hmm. It's like if you see gazelle or whatever kind of animal at the pond, they're drinking their water. Lions come. They run away. They go all crazy. But 15 minutes later, they back at the pond drinking water like nothing happened at all. Human beings hold on to their fear, and they hold on to their doubts, and they push them into the next day. And you have fear about things that happened 15 years ago, which makes no sense because you can't go 15 years back.
Right, and you can't go back. You've been going forward.
Always.
Which is great. Let's look at a little bit of what you're doing now. You're living out in Berlin.
Yes, living in Berlin, Germany.
And some of what you're doing in kind of expanding people's minds, looking at the whole world. Let's take a look.
What's good, people? It's the Hip Hop Roll Show. I'm your host with the most, International Man of Leisure, J-Roo the Damager, and today I'm coming to you from Nantes. Where is this Nantes, you ask? Nantes is a city in western France. The language spoken in Nantes is French. Nantes used to be known as the Venice of the West, as the city of dukes, and is still home to an awesome castle.
You just having fun out there, or you want to show people the world?
I came up with this idea because one night, I was in New York. I was going to a friend's bar, and I met some guys outside, and they were like, oh, wow, man, we haven't seen you in a while. Where have you been? And I was like, well, you know, I'm out in Europe a lot. And he was like, oh, man, Europe, what language do they speak out there? So it was kind of funny, but at the same time, it was kind of sad. So I decided that I wanted to show people about the places that I go so they have a broader perspective of the world, because that's what changed me as an individual, being able to travel. And I try to do it in 2 minutes because I know today people's attention spans are short, right? So I try to do it in under 2 minutes.
What'd you say? I gotta go.
So, you know, and from there, I'm gonna expand it. I'm gonna start doing interviews with restaurants and club owners and just other locals. But right now, I just wanted it to be a quick geography history right. lesson so that the guy from East New York, he may never thought of going to Nantes. Where is that? Or
isn't it crazy? I mean, I love what you're saying, and it's one of the paradoxes of the information age that we could see more of the world now than we ever could. You could be a relatively regular person, don't have a lot of money, and you, with video and social media, there's so much more of the world that you can at least see. But what do we end up doing? We do a lot of insular stuff, people on their phones looking at celebrities or this and that, and you're opening up the world. Before I let you go, gotta ask, since you're here, top five MCs all time.
Top five MCs all time.
And what music is exciting you now?
Jay Rude the Damager, Jay Rude, nah. I love Kool G Rap.
Yeah.
Kool G Rap is my number one all-time favorite.
Okay.
I think
got that.
His style of rhyming was it was incredible. He said things in one verse that dudes don't say on whole records now.
Yeah.
The amount of words, the amount of verbiage.
Number two.
Number two is Big Daddy Kane.
Okay.
And
who's
I saw him on your
chair?
Show. Yeah, I was gonna say, I saw him on your show. I love Kane because Kane's just Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Kane's Brooklyn and he was super smooth.
So smooth.
He was super, almost, to this day.
He's the kind of lyricist where it actually matters less what they say.
To this day.
Like, Biggie was like that where everyone loved what Biggie was saying, but it also sometimes didn't even matter.
Kane is... And I love Biggie. That was my guy. I'll even put Biggie in there.
Number three?
Put Biggie at number three.
Okay.
Because he was... And Biggie was a really funny person. Like, I knew him personally, and the things that he would say would just have you cracking up, right?
When you knew him, did he know how big he was going to get?
I mean, he had that confidence. He had
the
swag.
Because you walk around Brooklyn now and you got the murals and the memories, and it's like he's bigger than life. And, of course, dying so young, being murdered,
And that's what it is. Didn't he make a song, Nobody Loves You Till You're Dead, or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
So, but he definitely had the talent. He definitely, and you know, a lot of people think that I made the record Playing Yourself and a couple other records, but it had nothing to do with Biggie at all.
It was not about Biggie.
No, that was my dude. It was just misunderstanding. Like, Premier always tells everybody that. So, okay. So, number four, I have to give, can I put a group?
Yes.
EPMD.
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 Eric Sermon.
EPMD.
Yeah.
And I mean, Gangstar's by default. So I'm not gonna even do Gangstar. That's just, I'm here because of Gangstar, right? So
well, there we go.
But no, I gotta give you one more.
Okay,
I gotta give you one more. De La Soul.
De La Soul, who are still trying to work out their music rights.
We gotta give love to De La because their record changed the game. Skits and all of that type stuff, that wasn't happening.
Neighborhoods is now hoods because nobody's neighbors.
See? Potholes in their lawns.
I love you coming out on the beach. Jeru the Damager,
thank you so much for being here, man.
Thank you. This is The Beat with Ari Melber, and I am joined by hip-hop producer, DJ, and legend Justin Just Blaze Smith, who's worked with many talented artists from Jay-Z to Eminem to Beyonce to Kendrick Lamar, 7 Grammy nominations, 6 for Album of the Year. Thanks for coming on The Beat.
Thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
There is so much music that people love, and you seem to be behind it. In it, not necessarily on stage, but when people hear that, they go, oh, if you like Kendrick, if you like Jay-Z, if you like Beyonce. First obvious question, how do you end up working with so many great artists?
I ask myself the same thing every day, you know. It's kind of mind-blowing, because if you had told me, you know, 25 years ago, this is what I'd be doing, I would never believed you, you know, and here we are. It's been a really wild ride, but I think really what it comes down to in terms of, you know, my track record. I started out working with a lot of, you know, lower levels, lower tier artists.
Less prominent.
Yes, less prominent. Still very talented. It's nothing to do with their talent. You know, they just weren't as popular. And with each project that I worked on when I was younger, things got bigger and bigger and the word would start to spread. And the life changer was really just linking up with Rockefeller, you know, and then eventually getting in a room with Jay-Z. And to be honest, you know, for the first year and a half, Jay didn't pay me any attention. I was working with everybody at Rockefeller except Jay.
And was that a thing where you knew that was distance? You guys didn't talk?
Yeah,
you were just in the circle?
It was definitely a distance thing. Our thing, you know, my team, our thing was always, if we get in the same room, magic will happen.
But with Jay-Z, you could be in the same building, be under the same umbrella of Rockefeller, and not be in the same room.
Right. But for me, it was just physically us getting in the same room. Like, let me play you some music directly. Let me not give it to an A&R who's going to give it to a manager who's going to give it to somebody
else. So what
else.
Was the first thing that caught his ear?
There was an artist by the name of Emil, who was a Rockefeller artist, and she had a record called That's Right that we put together while we were working on her album. Jake heard the song, and the idea was for him to feature on it. So he's like, oh, who did the beat, by the way? They're like, oh, that kid Just. Oh, yeah? All right. Tell him to send me some music. This was his first time asking directly.
How old were you at the time?
20, maybe.
You're 20 years old.
I think, yeah.
And Jay-Z says...
Hold on. I'll take that back. 22.
You're 22 years old. Yeah. And you're at Rockefeller. You're 22. Right. Jay-Z says, let me get some beats from you. What are you thinking?
So I don't know what to do. You know, it's because, like I said, I've made attempts before, but this is the first time that it's actually being requested.
And what was the first beat he
So I sent him a cassette of a song that's now called Streets Is Talking. And I sent it to him, and then 2 days later, they called me. They said, hey, Jay rhymed directly from your... Jay rhymed on your beat directly off the cassette. Like, they took the cassette, dumped it to a reel, and he rhymed on it. He wants you to come to the studio. This was on a Tuesday, so Wednesday I went to the studio. And long story short, he was laying the vocals to another song from a Dynasty album called Parking Lot Pimpin'. So while he's in the booth, I throw on some headphones, pull up the drum machine, make another beat. He walks out, oh, nice to meet you, whatever, you know, we exchange pleasantries. I'm like, hey, check this out. I play the beat, and he's like, this is amazing. When did you make this? I said, right now. He said, what do you mean right now? I said, while you were in the booth recording, I made the beat right now. He's like, so you made this beat in like 10 minutes? I'm like, yeah. He said, all right, check this out. There's two rooms in this studio. The room next door is yours. Stick around, I'm gonna make you a star. You need anything? And I was just like.
He said, I'm gonna make you a star.
His exact words.
Did you feel excited or nervous?
Both, you know, but I work best under pressure. So
yeah.
I went right into that room. I moved in that night, moved in all my gear in that night. And within a matter of a couple of weeks, we had the Dynasty album finished. And that was pretty much like the start of the next
And how do you get from there to public service announcement?
Ooh, a lot of trial and error, a lot of throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what sticks, you know. There was a lot of healthy competition and steel sharpening steel happening at Baseline Studios. That's when we recorded. So, you know, you'll have Freeway and the Young Guns in one room, you have Memphis Bleek in another. You have the Dipset guys and other in the lounge writing. Jay's recording in the room. Kanye's bringing beats. I'm working on beats. Rock Wild is coming through with beats. So it's just like, for me, it wasn't an aggressive competition. It was just more so like everybody's being inspired by somebody.
But
and
you
I
know,
feel like
you know Howell Raines, he used to run the New York Times.
Yeah.
He talks about creative metabolism.
Right.
That you could get what you just described. So many creative people.
Right.
And the actual metabolism starts to rise.
It's like magic. You know, when you look at any, you know, no pun intended, but you look at any musical dynasty, whether it's Bad Boy, Motown, you know, No Limit, whatever, there's a magic that happens. The magic that happened with a lot of these movements took place because everybody was under one roof. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's that creative energy, that metabolism that just starts to flow and becomes a being of its own.
So let's talk about the way that the best songs feel timeless.
Right.
At least to their fans. Because public service announcement, Jay writes in Decoded. First of all, it's one of the first songs he breaks down in Decoded.
Oh, really?
So that tells us something about what it meant.
Right, to him.
And writing about you, he says, when you kick it off, he says, this is just Blaze's voice. Although he recorded it in a way that made it sound older, like a political speech from the Black Power era captured on a distant tape recorder.
Yes.
Was that deliberate? Did you guys talk about
totally
that?
Totally deliberate. We didn't talk about it. The thing about with Jay is, like, you know, he kind of, I put down a basic beat, he'll put his rhymes down, and then leave me to my devices to actually produce the song. So, when we first recorded that record, there were no speeches. It was just pianos, beat drops, he rhymes, and that's that. And it was like, okay, how do we make this into a song? And how do we make this into a song quickly? Because the album had already gone out to the duplication plant. It was copies were already being manufactured without that song on it.
Really?
Yes. And when we decided to do this record, we had to physically scrap all those copies that were already made and repress the album. So we had, you know, we had to do this quick. So I'm like, what would set this off? But you know what? We don't need a hook in the traditional sing-along type sense. Let's just deliver a message. Because this feels like when you're at a concert, the lights all go down, and you hear those haunting pianos come in, and then there's a big explosion, and all the lights come out, you know, come on bright, and the spotlight is back on the stage.
And when you do a beat like that, do you think it's got to be for a particular artist, or it's multidimensional? Any number of artists could have made it hot.
Generally, when I'm working on a track, I normally have an artist in mind. It doesn't always pan out that way. You know, to be honest, most of my biggest hits were intended for other people.
Really?
Yes. And I can give you a list of those for days. Like Usher's Throwback was supposed to be a Dr. Dre record. Rock the Mic was always a Freeway record. Oh Boy was originally a Memphis Bleak record. Fabulous Can't Let You Go was also a Memphis Bleak record. Actually, one of the funniest things, the running joke for about 2 months at Baseline, I must have had like 4 number one hits in a row. And all of them were supposed to be records for Memphis Bleak that he passed on. So the running joke became, Jay would walk in and say, "Yo, what's the hot record right now?" And Guru would be like, "Whatever Bleak passed on last week." But yeah, you know what?
So explain, what does passed on mean?
You know, I present the artist with a track, maybe some reference vocals, maybe a concept.
And he says, "I'm not feeling it."
And they're just not into it.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honest, that's actually worked out in my favor a lot of times.
Right.
Because had those artists that I intended those records for made those records, they might not have gone on to become number one hits.
Well, wasn't it Kanye who said, they told him, "You got to stop keeping all the good beats for yourself"?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, it's music finds its way to where it's supposed to go at the end of the day.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Let me play for you Jay-Z talking about why working with you is special because you have to hit the level you guys have already achieved. Take a look.
Okay.
And what about Just Blaze?
What?
How's Just Blaze? Because we heard that you was working with some stuff with him, and we just haven't heard anything as of yet.
He wants to know why Just Blaze isn't on the new album. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, we just think find that zone. And plus, the thing with Just Blaze and I is we really have, like, records that people really care about. So many, you don't know the PSA. So when we're trying to make music, we're trying to beat that.
Right.
So it's not like a blank sheet when he walks in the room.
That's true. You know, the gift and the curse is that our collaborations have set so high of a bar, we can't do anything subpar or beneath that, which is frustrating because there are so many other good records that we've started to work on over the years, and then when you listen to them, you're like, "All right, is this as impactful as PSA or You Don't Know or What We Do or Girls, Girls, Girls?" If not, it's kind of like, just let it go, you know? Which is unfortunate, but I always tell people, like, I probably have 2 unreleased albums worth of songs with Jay, you know, that will probably never see the light of day.
Where are they?
In a secret, secure location, away from prime eyes.
Why don't you bring them? We can listen to them. We won't air them. We can just
come
listen
by the crib,
to them.
Come by the crib. I'll play them for you.
I'll hold you to that. I hold everyone to whatever they say at the table. I'm wondering then, though, you and Jay are sitting there. Who decides this isn't ready?
Sometimes it's him, sometimes it's me. You know, the same way when we know we have something, it's a collaborative effort. Sometimes we both just look at each other and say, this might not be it.
We want to start a new series. I haven't done this yet, but we want to call it Awkward Moments in Hip Hop.
Okay.
And this will be...
My life is full of those.
This will be Volume 1, Episode 1, where I'm about to show you what we found. This didn't air on television. This actually was kind of from the cutting room floor of a classic 60 Minutes interview with old Jay-Z before what people think of Jay-Z now.
Okay.
Take a look at this exchange.
Jay-Z often writes songs about his time there, including the day he shot his older brother in the shoulder for stealing his jewelry. He was 12 years old.
I wouldn't feel comfortable talking about that on TV. It's not cool.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a bit over the line.
Okay.
Awkward. Wow. I mean, I guess respect to the interviewer for asking that question or attempting to ask that question, but it's not something you really want to discuss on TV. No.
Well, it's a funny thing about any interview because sometimes you're pressing people, you want to respect them, sometimes you're pushing them. But if you're literally asking someone to discuss an alleged felony, I don't know how much they're going to disclose.
Nothing at all if they're smart. Especially not on TV.
Walk us through the evolution of the artists you've worked with when you think about Jay coming out of what is well known, coming out of his his youth experience to becoming a global entrepreneur, or Kendrick Lamar or Beyonce, who you knew at earlier stages in her career. What's the most important thing you've seen when people shift, even to, I think, some of them probably levels they didn't know they were headed to?
Right. Growth is very important in this business. You know, that's part of going back to what Jay was talking about in terms of the music that we've made, you know, if and when we ever do come back and get back together, it has to symbolize growth. It has to demonstrate growth. We can't make public service announcement again in 2019. You know, that was a moment in time. On top of that, you gotta have the all the people that you've mentioned have had the right team about them. Mm. Or around them, you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, Jay is an incredible businessman, without doubt, without question, but he's only one person. He can't facilitate every deal and sign every contract and negotiate everything on his own, you know? You gotta have that team around you that's willing to, or that knows and understands how to take the foundation that you've built on and put an empire on top of it.
You worked on Lemonade.
Yes.
Was that like working on a normal album?
No. It wasn't, because what Beyonce was doing was giving me demos of stuff that she had cut and then kind of asking me to produce the songs that she already kind of had written and put together. You know, a lot of times with the artist, I'm starting from scratch. It's always a little bit harder for me to take something that's existing and remix it, mm-hmm. per se, because it's already a good song. I don't want to... I have a hard time with deconstructing a good song and then making another good song out of it.
Did she tell you about the spirit or the sentiment she wanted to power the album, or you got that feeling just from listening?
No, to be honest, I kind of got that from listening, because she'd given me about 4 or 5 records. And as I'm listening to it, I'm listening to the lyrics, and this is like super, like, you know, NDA level type stuff. Like, you're not talking to anybody about it, your family members, nothing. So I'm just sitting there in my studio, and I'm going through the records, and I'm like, nah, this can't be what this album is about. But when you listen to all the common, you know, the common themes, I'm like, wow, they're gonna turn the entire world upside down when this album drops, just because of the personal nature of it and what was going on, you know, in their lives at the time. Never been done before in our world and in our culture, you know. So I definitely was able to get a sense of what the album was about, but you know, I had to keep that to myself. But in terms of the creative process, like I was saying, I normally have a hard time taking somebody else's song and making it into something, right. But I had to remember, she came to me for a reason. She said, these are songs that I feel like you need to be a part of. They need your signature sound. So at that point, it wasn't about taking the song and making it completely different. It was about taking those songs and making them my own.
So why did she have such dual trust in you? Trust in you to handle it confidentially for as long as she determined, and right. then trust in your ability to execute on the sound.
Well, I think in terms of executing the sound, you know, when we spoke on the phone, her exact words were, these records that I have are rooted in your sound. Like, when I hear these demos, I think of you. You're the only person that can do this. And that's because of my track record and some of the sounds that I've established. On top of that, I think the trust in just trusting me with the songs themselves and the lyrics, because she's notorious about... Like, nobody really gets anything. You want to work on a Beyonce record, you go to her. You work in her studio with her people, you know, overseeing things, because they don't want anything leaving the room or anything like that. Going back to what I said about having probably 2 albums worth of unreleased Jay-Z material, it's kind of like, guys, I've had these songs for decades. They haven't gone anywhere. You know, there's an inherent trust, because it's like family. Jay's family, so by extension, she's family.
Sure. Before I let you go, one of your... Album of the Year Grammy nominations is Late Registration.
Yes.
Is it one of the best hip-hop albums of all time?
Thank you.
Is it?
Oh, you're asking me.
I can tell you what I think, but people are more interested in what you think. Is it?
Do I think it's one of the best rap albums of all time? Of that era, definitely. From the content to Kanye's growth as a songwriter, to the production. I believe that was the album. Yeah, that was the album with John Bryan assisting on the production. That era is probably one of, if not the most well-produced and cohesive albums of that time period, for sure, for sure.
Has Kanye West ever put out a bad album?
No, some are better than others. I don't think any of his albums are bad.
Like, I am a huge Jay-Z fan.
Right.
I could point to some albums that are lackluster.
Point to one.
Well...
I'm curious as to your opinion.
I mean, we could talk Best of Both Worlds.
I don't count that as a Jay-Z album.
Okay, well, if you don't count it, then it goes out of the archive.
There are some jams on there, but all right, yeah, Best of Both Worlds 2, no way.
So Kanye is controversial for many reasons. You've known him a long time.
Yes.
But he's one of the few solo rap artists who's probably never had a bad album.
Yeah, no, you know what? one of the things that I used to tell people early on. Historically, when you look through just the history of hip hop, producers necessarily aren't the best lyricists, but they tend to make some of the best records and the best songs because they're producers by nature.
Because they're one of the only artists who, by definition, actually can have some knowledge on both
sides. Exactly.
Right.
And they know, you know, they understand a bit more about song construction and song production than the average artist. You know, so when you look at, like, Dre is not the most amazing lyrical lyricist, he made both Chronics. You know what I mean? You look at somebody like Jermaine Dupri, nobody's saying, oh my God, you know, he's the illest rapper ever. But he's, you can't deny that over the years, over the past 20, 30 years, he's made incredible music. You know what I mean?
Who else is on that list?
Diamond D, Large Professor, there's a RZA.
RZA, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of these guys, they, like I said, the three things that most of these guys have in common. They are producers as well as artists, and many of them start out as DJs.
Right.
Almost, not even almost, everything that I've learned about production that I've developed over the years was rooted in DJing.
Last question for Just Blaze.
Yes.
The artists out there you haven't worked with yet that you'd like to.
That's the worst question. People always ask me that, and I never, ever, I don't have an answer for that. God.
Billie Eilish?
Who?
She's just a new person you wouldn't have worked with yet.
Oh, no, I don't know. New artist?
Jennifer Lopez?
Did I do that already? I feel like I did something for her at one point.
Was it memorable?
It was for the time. Oh, wait, yo, I did do something for her. But it was more of an EDM trap thing, like 4 years ago.
Migos?
I would totally do that.
Yeah.
It's funny, I actually, you know, the trend with a lot of the younger rappers, there's a new, I shouldn't say it's a new trend, but the current trend that's been around for a minute now is the blatant disrespect to the older generation.
It's too, like, much of that, right?
Right, and it's, so it's a little unnerving because I respect both sides of the game, the older and the younger.
Is ignorance even count as disrespect or just a lack of knowledge? Because when Kodak Black keeps talking about Biggie or whomever,
right,
you get the feeling at about 21, he may not have sat down and even heard the catalog. So right. What is he really talking about other than the absence of knowledge?
Right. But I think for some of them, they're proud to not have that knowledge. Like, we don't care.
Right.
The reason I bring that up is because one night when I was, I ran to the studio, funny enough, to go handle some Ye stuff a few months back, Migos were there.
Mm.
And I can't remember if it was Offset or Takeoff, it was one of the two that were in the room with me. And he kind of pulled me to the side like, yo, I'd love to get in the studio with you.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh.
Just Blaze, we'd love to get in the studio with you too. Thank you for coming on the beat.
No problem. Thank you for having me, man. Much appreciated.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.